Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
If you're like me, you are no doubt wondering every day, when will the COVID-19 crisis peak? When will this all slow down? But on the front lines, at hospitals in our communities, it's almost like fighting a war.
The biggest project that's going on now at Hackensack University Medical Center is we're creating an additional 72 beds by converting what was the cafeteria.
On this edition of the 880 In-Depth podcast, a conversation with the CEO of New Jersey's largest healthcare network, Hackensack Meridian Health. Tim Scheld. We continue to tell the stories of the work done on the front lines in this fight against COVID-19. And in this edition of In Depth, our reporter Peter Haskell goes one-on-one with Bob Garrett. He's the president and CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health. They run 17 hospitals and 500 patient care locations up and down the state of New Jersey, including a big one right here in the heart of the New Jersey COVID battle in Bergen County, Hackensack University Medical Center.
How are you managing?
So we're managing well, Peter. It's been a challenge as the number of COVID-19 patients grow every day. But our network was well organized in terms of preparing for this pandemic, and we've been able to really mobilize our workforce, our supply chain, and our bed capacity very well. We've been able to coordinate efforts. So as an example, we're in the process of doubling our ICU beds throughout our health network. We're able to source additional ICU staff really from around the country. And we also have been working day and night on our supply chain, and that means personal protective equipment as well as ventilators and other necessary supplies and equipment to keep our team members safe and to give our patients the best care possible.
It seems every day the numbers just grow exponentially, especially in Bergen in the north part of the state. Give us a sense what the hospital looks like now. Where are you putting people?
Yeah, so we are expanding intensive care capabilities significantly. So in the north part of the state, where we've seen the most significant growth rate in numbers of COVID-19 patients, we have literally tripled our ICU capacity at Hackensack University Medical Center. So what we've done is we've converted what were medical surgical units into intensive care unit capabilities by changing airflow, by enhancing staff, in some cases by eliminating windows. And in the ORs, we've also converted beds into recovery beds into ICU settings. And the biggest project that's going on now at Hackensack University Medical Center is we're creating an additional 72 beds by converting what was the cafeteria for that was a team member and a visitor cafeteria. It's actually a huge space. into several pods, and they will total 72 beds. So I have to tell you, the team has been very creative in terms of expanding capacity. And now what we're doing is making sure that we have the appropriate equipment to support those additional beds, and that we have the right staff to take care of the patients in those additional beds. But, you know, we really needed it, Peter, because, you know, currently we have 2,300 positive patients across our network, and another 4,800 that are persons under investigation, meaning that we they have symptoms, but we have not yet received test results. So there's been a significant increase. I have to say, over the last 2 days, the rate of growth isn't as great as it was, say, a few days ago. So there might be some encouraging signs, but we don't want to yet call that a trend. I'm hoping that some of the social distancing and the stay-at-home orders that the governor has put in place will start to work, but I think it's too early to draw any conclusions from that.
I want to ask you about staffing. Where do you get people from? What kind of training do they need? I mean, you can't take, I suspect you can't take a gastroenterologist and put them in the ICU. What happens here?
Okay, so we have a multifaceted staffing plan. Keep in mind that on any given day, we're already 600 team members down, because on any given day, we're averaging, I'd say, between 550 and 625 team members that are out because they've potentially been exposed to a COVID-19 patient, or they're showing symptoms as a result of potential exposure. So, or they've tested positive. That's the other category. So it's a lot of team members. Those are nurses, they're respiratory therapists, they're physicians, there are, you know, a variety of different caregivers and support team. So our strategy has been to number one, redeploy staff that were previously working in areas that are now not operating. So about 2 weeks ago, a little over 2 weeks ago, we curtailed our elective surgeries and procedures that were non-urgent. So staff, operating room staff, were redeployed to emergency departments and to ICUs. We've also been trying to obtain additional staff from nursing agencies and other agencies that supply allied health professionals. And literally, we have staff that have come in from all over the country, and it's tight. But we've been able to add to our staff in that sense. We've also called up retired doctors, retired nurses, and retired allied health staff. And then our last strategy is that we've redeployed staff that they were in business functions or in information technology or in finance, areas like that. They are helping behind the scenes. They're helping clean rooms, helping environmental services. They're helping cook meals. So they're not working in a direct patient care role, but they're working in support roles. So we've really, tried to utilize every strategy possible to supplement our current staffing.
I want to turn to supplies. We hear from Governor Murphy in New Jersey, Governor Cuomo in New York, about a serious supply shortage, and if they're not out of supplies now, they're concerned about it. Are you concerned, and how tight is the supply situation?
Well, I am very concerned about supplies and equipment, and the reason I am concerned is that I believe that this crisis is going to go on for some time, even though the models show that it may peak in a few weeks or even in a month. I believe, we're going to be treating COVID patients for quite some time. So given that, we're going to need to make sure that we have adequate supplies, like personal protective equipment, appropriate masks for our team members, like ventilators for our patients that require ICU and require ventilation. So right now, we do have adequate supplies to take care of the patients that we are seeing, But it's getting tighter and tighter every day. There's no question about that. Governor Cuomo, Governor Murphy are absolutely correct about that. But we are sourcing whatever we can. So we are, you know, we have gotten some supplies from the national stockpile. That includes PPE, personal protective equipment. It includes ventilators as well. We have also been trying to get supplies from whatever vendors or suppliers are out there. And there's some traditional supplies and equipment companies, and then there are what I would call the black market that's operating out there, where there are suppliers that are marking up prices sometimes 8, 10, 12, 15 times even what you would normally pay. But, you know, in a time of crisis, a lot of health systems are having to turn to those kinds of strategies to keep their team members safe. I mean, the safety of our team members to treat patients, to treat COVID-19 patients, is always paramount on our mind. So, answer your question, yes, we are very concerned. Right now, we do have adequate supplies, but they are literally getting tighter and tighter and tighter every day that passes.
In terms of the black market, are you buying from the black market, and how important is it to pay top dollar to get what you need?
Well, we're being careful, obviously, with our resources. But yes, we're using every means possible to make sure that our team members are safe, including non-traditional suppliers. But you know, we're making sure that that the supplies that they're giving are legitimate. So if it's a mask, it has to be a mask that we can utilize in a protective way. If it's a ventilator, we have to make sure that it's the type of ventilators that will benefit our COVID-19 patients. But yes, I mean, right now we're turning over every stone possible to be sure that we keep our team members safe so that they can in turn take care of these patients in a safe manner.
This is one healthcare system handling at the moment 2,800 positive patients and another 4,800 under investigation. Overwhelming numbers for sure. And their biggest concern? Yes, we hear it every day. The need for ventilators to help these sick patients breathe and stay alive.
I would say that it's very tight. I wouldn't put a six-day mark on our supply. It's hard to quantify. I wouldn't say that's too far off, though. But, you know, there are ventilators that we have in the pipeline that we expect to come in. If they come in, you know, we'll be able to keep up with demand. But, you know, certainly we're not at a comfortable level of ventilators in stock that I would say, hey, you know, we're definitely gonna have enough. I think it's tight. I can't put a specific number on it, but I don't think Governor Cuomo's numbers they do. That certainly sounds about right.
I'm sure in the past you've planned for all kinds of eventualities. How does what you're dealing with now compare to the kinds of drills you've done, the kinds of exercises you've done?
Well, you know, hospitals do a good job in emergency preparedness. It's one of the skill sets that is very, very important, obviously, in running a hospital and making sure you're successful. I mean, we have been through a lot of emergencies over and a lot of responses to emergencies over many, many years. You know, we had to deal with Superstorm Sandy. We had to deal with the Ebola crisis, and we were one of the designated Ebola hospitals. Hackensack University Medical Center was at the time. We've also dealt with many natural disasters, and of course, you know, we were expecting a significant number of patients, which we were prepared for after 9/11. And as we all know, those patients didn't materialize because, sadly, so many people died on the scene at Ground Zero. But we do drill. We have an emergency preparedness plan. It's executed. It's drilled upon on a regular basis. And we have a disaster plan that goes into effect when the emergency situation gets to a certain level. And at Hackensack Meridian, early on in this pandemic, we did activate our disaster plan. And so therefore, a command structure was set up with a centralized command center for the Hackensack Meridian Health Network, and then command centers were established in each of our hospitals, and so that there is good communication and there's incident command leaders at each of the sites. They are actually staffed and manned 24/7. So if team members or physicians or even, you know, members of the public call in for questions, there is somebody there to answer all those questions. And if there's a need for supplies or a need for staff or a need for additional beds, those command centers have those resources at their disposal, and they can dispatch them.
Has there something that's come up in this pandemic where you think to yourself, boy, this is bigger than we thought it was going to be. It was faster than we thought it was going to be. It's worse than we thought it was going to be. Anything like that?
Absolutely. This is you know, and I've been in the in this field for well over 35 years, Peter, and I have never seen anything like this. All the other emergency responses that I spoke to you about, whether it was the Ebola epidemic or it was Superstorm Sandy, I mean, those were challenges and challenging times, but I have never seen anything like this. And I think really, if you talk to, you know, almost all the experts around the world, whether it's the World Health Organization or it's the CDC or it's Dr. Fauci or whoever is giving us information, they probably would agree that this pandemic, I think, surprised them and a lot of people. I think it is a lot worse. The volume of cases, the easiness of how it is spreading from one person to another, and the fact that, you know, that the therapies are still in their early stages, I think, you know, makes it a very dangerous situation, and one that I think did surprise a lot of the experts. And certainly, you know, we always prepare for the worst, but we're always hoping for the best. But this pandemic surprised everyone. But I do think Hackensack Meridian Health, because we were so well prepared, and we do have a very thorough emergency preparedness plan, I think, you know, we're doing as well as anybody out there in dealing with it. Having said that, though, it is still an incredible challenge.
Well, you heard this week about patients in North Jersey specifically being diverted. Tell us about that. Are there patients? How does that work? Do patients not get sent somewhere? Or do they get sent somewhere and they say, sorry, the door's closed?
So some hospitals have reached capacity, so they are totally out of intensive care unit beds. Their emergency departments are completely full. So they would go on divert because in their estimation, it would be unsafe for additional patients to come in. Now, having said that, though, some ambulances sometimes have no choice. So if an ambulance does come to the doorstep of an emergency department, I believe those hospitals still would treat that patient. But they go on divert to try to stabilize and to try to catch their breath, so to speak, and be able to move patients so that additional patients can come in to the emergency department safely. So we have heard that there are several hospitals in North Jersey that have gone on divert, and that just, you know, creates, you know, even more more of a crisis, more pressure on, you know, places like Hackensack Meridian Health. But like I said, our team has done a superb job in really expanding our capacity so quickly. So we, as an example, to expand capacity in our emergency department, we've deployed a mobile satellite emergency department. It's actually kind of a combination of an emergency department and an ICU on wheels, and with something that we obtained from the Department of Defense after 9/11, actually, and it served many different emergency responses, but it's been used to really increase our capacity and our emergency services at Hackensack University Medical Center and at Jersey Shore University Medical Center. We also have screening tents that have gone up at all of our hospitals, which also expands capacity. And as I said, we have also, each of our hospitals has put forth plans to at least double their ICU beds. So, you know, I have to give our team a huge amount of credit for their creativity, for their focus and their execution on really carrying out that part of the mission very, very quickly and efficiently.
During these times of crisis, we often see the best of humanity and the worst of humanity. Give us a sense of some of the good things that you've seen and some of the troubling things you've seen.
So on the good side, the spirit of our team, those frontline caregivers, I can't say enough about them. When the books are written about this pandemic, they will go down as American heroes, and rightfully so. Their spirit, it's almost like they keep going back into battle, and they're relentless. They're dedicated to their patients. They're dedicated to doing the right thing. They're working extra shifts. They are getting the job done. And boy, I tell you, it's the best of humanity for sure. In terms of the sad part of this tragedy and kind of the worst, I wouldn't say it's the worst of humanity, but it's just such a sad result of what's happening. You know, there are COVID-19 patients that sadly are dying, as we know, and they're dying alone. And because they need to be in isolation, they don't have their families around them, as many people often do when they pass away. And that is just a really sad part of this entire issue. And I was talking to one of our staff nurses today, and she said, you know, one of the things that they try to do to provide comfort is they are the nurses are actually family members sometimes at the end of life, because family members can't be there because these patients are contagious and they have to stay in isolation. But the nurses in protective gear serve as a comfort, as a almost like a family member for these patients as they're nearing the end of life. So that's actually a good part of humanity, but certainly a sad outcome from this terrible pandemic.
As you look forward, what keeps you up at night? What worries you?
Well, what worries me is if these models that show that the curve is flattening and that we can, you know, ultimately come out of this, you know, with a peak in a few weeks and a tail that will last, you know, say for a month or 6 weeks or 2 months. If it goes beyond that, I do worry about staffing. I worry about our supplies, our equipment. I worry about you know, being able to continue to expand capacity. They are in New Jersey. They are going to be putting up field hospitals, which should be helpful. I think the first one is scheduled to be up and running by early next week in northern New Jersey, and then shortly thereafter in central New Jersey, and then ultimately a third one down in southern New Jersey. But it does keep me up at night if this pandemic continues, certainly at this pace, for a long, sustained period of time. I do worry about our, not just Hackensack Meridian, I'm speaking about healthcare in general across the country. And then the other piece that I worry about is, you know, if it does come back, let's say it does subside, but it comes back again in the fall and the winter.
Bob Garrett, the president and CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, with our Peter Haskell. Don't miss any of these podcast conversations. Subscribe to 880 In Depth. You'll find it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do subscribe, they will show up when we push them out, which is more frequently these days. Be safe.
Or the winter, you know, that would keep me up at night too, thinking about, you know, how we prepare for that into the future. And, you know, we've started to think about those things, but that does certainly keep me up at night. And then the other piece that keeps me up at night, quite honestly, is the toll it's taking on humanity. I mean, you know, in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this. You know, we all worry about our own loved ones, but when I see, you know, I see the loved ones of COVID-19 patients and what the patients are going through and what their families are going through. You know, boy, I tell you what, I have a hard time sleeping when I think about that.
Bob, you've been most gracious with your time. Is there anything else that you want to share, or did we cover it?
No, I just want to, again, say two things. Number one, I want to just congratulate and thank healthcare workers everywhere at Hackensack Meridian Health, but really everywhere. They are doing a absolutely tremendous, heroic job. And I also want to thank the general public for heeding the warnings about social distancing, about staying at home, because that's giving our healthcare systems in New York, New Jersey, and around the country, it's giving us a fighting chance to fight this pandemic.
Bob, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I appreciate you covering the story.
Bob Garrett, the president and CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, with our Peter Haskell. Don't miss any of these podcast conversations. Subscribe to 880 In Depth. You'll find it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do subscribe, they will show up when we push them out, which is more frequently these days. Be safe.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.